accession number 19022, reel 2.
Donald Scrimger, reel 2.
I picked up my equipment and went to this track, and after a while I got a lift on an armoured car that had been back to base for repair. And I was then taken along this track to a little, it was called a transit camp, but it was just three small tents at the side of the road, run by a sergeant major in the Buffs. And he gave me further rations, and he got me a lift on a lorry further along the road. And I had no idea where my battalion was, and I just kept going along this road until I found somebody. And I got to a place called Miserata, and I got in the transit camp there. And being a lance corporal, I was put in charge of two other men going up the line as escort to two Glaswegian deserters to be taken to the next transit camp at Tripoli. This was a bit hair-raising, because I was more frightened of these two Glaswegians than I was of the Germans, actually, because there were a couple of wild men. Anyway, we were sat on the back of this lorry, and we got them to Tripoli, and I handed them over and breathed a sigh of relief. And there was much more activity in the Tripoli area, and I got more information about the guards that they were at a place called Medanine. And so I got another lift up to Medanine, and I finally found my battalion after about, took me about a fortnight, I think, to find the battalion, and I'd done a distance, I think, about 600 miles until I found the battalion, and I got back to them near a place called Marath.
So you've been hitchhiking rides in lorries?
Yes, and getting food from transit camps.
What situation were the battalion in at Marath?
They were dug in a dried up riverbed, in a wadi, as they call them. And apparently we got the final infantry attack of the North African war there, but they were pushed back by machine gunners, and it didn't amount to much, actually, and that was my first taste of action, and I didn't think it was so bad after all. That.
What did you experience of it yourself?
Nothing, really. I was just working on the telephones and radio and wireless. And we were visited by General Montgomery in his tank. And our commanding officer had to climb on top of the tank to shake hands with him.
Did he address you?
I think it was the usual words of good cheer. That's about it. There was no speech or anything like that. We couldn't see much of him out of the turret of the tank. No, we weren't too impressed, actually. And a few days later, we did this attack at Marath. I don't know whether you've heard of the Battle of Marath at all.
I have. What do you remember about that?
What I remember about it was the first person I saw killed was a man who I'd palled up with on the troop ship going out, Lance Corporal Dunn.
How did it happen?
We were going through a minefield, walking along a tape, and he was just at the side of the tape. I understand he'd been killed by a mortar bomb. And
was this at night? Or
at night, Yeah, we started. The attack started approximately about 9 o'clock at night, and we'd been told there was one man and a boy on a motorbike, and that was it. But it proved different when we got started. We had to go through a minefield, which we didn't know about, and then everything happened, and we got a lot killed there. But as I say, the first person I ever saw killed in action was a chap who had been a friend of mine.
Were there casualties from the mines?
Oh yes, yeah, there was a lot of casualties. After the battle, one company, nine men came back out of one company of, 100. Some had been taken prisoner, but a lot had been killed and wounded and that. And it was a bit of a hair-raising experience. And after it was so bad that we started to come back. And we're in a dried-up riverbed again. And Colonel Faulkner told me and another guardsman that was with me to go along this riverbed as the Germans were coming down it. And we had to keep them, hold them up, and he would send us some assistance when he could. And this was the first rail action, as you might say, that I'd ever seen. And so this guardsman and I went down this riverbed and creeping behind boulders and things like that. And you could see bursts of machine gun fire, automatic fire, coming along this riverbed towards us from the Germans as they were coming along. And at that time, just behind us, a small honey tank came up. Well, a honey tank which was used by the Royal Artillery for spotters, for the spotters. And I said words to the effect that the officer who popped out the turret of this, "But I'm pleased to see you." He says, "You've nothing to be pleased about." He says, "We've got nothing in this thing." And so that didn't cheer me up a lot. Anyway, doing as I was told, I went back to battalion headquarters again, and they'd sent some trucks up to take us out, pull us out. And a truck pulled up near me, a 1500 weight truck, open top, and it was loaded up to the canopy, a metal canopy, loaded with bedding and all sorts of equipment, leaving a space at the top of about 18 inches. And we crawled in there at the top, this guardsman and I, and we went out in the back of this lorry. And as we were going out, we saw one of our fellas laid in the minefield with his leg all shattered. And so stopped the lorry, this truck, and this guardsman and I got out, and we got hold of this guardsman, and I don't know his name, I don't know anything at all about him now, but his leg was shattered, and we had to pick him up and slide him on the top of all this equipment and bedding in this truck. We had to slide him in there, and he must have been in agony, poor fellow, but there was nothing we could do about it. And we had to slide him in there and drive out, because we couldn't hang about because we were being shelled and mortared all the time. And we got him out and got about 2 miles back, where we found some of our fellows, and we handed him over to a doctor. And what happened to him then, I just don't know.
When you were in that dried up riverbed with the automatic fire coming at you, was that at night?
At night, yeah, in the dark.
What else do you remember about the fighting at Marath?
That the intelligence and information that we were given was totally wrong. But we found out afterwards it had been done as a diversion for an attack by the New Zealand division further along the Marath line. But we didn't know that at the time. But it left the battalion a company short and short-handed in the companies that were left.
Was there any air activity at Marath?
There was a plane that went over and dropped flares before, just at the point of when we were going in. But none apart from that. It was just shelling and mortaring and machine gun fire that we encountered.
What did morale seem to be like in the units at Marath?
It was a bit shaken, but nothing to complain about. But the talk about heroes and that sort of thing. But there was a lot of our fellows left behind. But one man, Guardsman Glover, Pop Glover we used to call him, a very nondescript sort of guardsman, as you might say. But he was left behind. And when daylight came, he found about two or three wounded guardsmen in this dried up riverbed and got them into a sort of a cave. Well, by that time, the Germans had come right round this riverbed. And so he was in the middle of them, as you might say. But at night, he came out and some Bren gun carriers had been knocked out. And he went round these carriers getting water and looking for rations on the carriers to take back to these guardsmen that he'd taken into this cave. And he was there about 2 days looking after these chaps, and until a patrol of Scots guards found him and brought them all out again. But I don't think he even got a thank you for it.
How did you find out about all this, about Guardsman Glover?
Well, he was one of ours, as you might say. And he told us afterwards. And, you know, I always thought he should have got some sort of recognition for what he'd done.
What impression at Marath did you get of the calibre of the German enemy?
We never decried them, not the Germans. Always respected them. And you didn't have such a good impression of the Italians, but you didn't decry the Germans at all.
About how long were you at Marath for?
We got pulled out there to sort of reform and reshuffle the men about in the companies to try and get some sort of unit together, I think. But when I first got back from Marath to where they'd got a little base, there wasn't many of us because the regimental sergeant major was making tea for us. And for somebody like the regimental sergeant major to come off his lofty perch to make tea for the ordinary odds and sods, as you might say, was something, but he was making tea for us. Was the regimental sergeant major. And from there, we sort of reformed, went back up to the coast, Enfidaville, Wadi Akaret, Seuss, and round to Tunis. And that's where we finished, at Tunis and Cape Bon.
Was there any fighting after the Marath line, or was it just pursuit?
Oh, yeah, it was pursuits more than anything. But, there was nothing as savage as the Marath line for a while.
What was the terrain like in Tunisia?
Very pleasant. That's what I was like in those days.
You're just showing me a photograph of yourself from those days. On the left-hand side?
Yeah.
Any other memories from Tunisia?
None that I can recall.
So what happened to you next?
We went to Pantelleria, a little island off Sicily, where the Americans had an underground aerodrome. And we were the sort of the infantry, the land troops, protecting the island while the Americans used the aerodrome.
What was it like on Pantelleria?
Oh, we were living on American rations and had American cigarette rations, and we thought it was fine. And then the invasion of Sicily took place, and we watched the ships going past, some of the ships going past. And we sort of pointed them in the right direction as they went past.
Were you under enemy attack at all at Pantelleria?
I think we had a bombing raid, but nothing of any importance, really. And from after Pantelleria, we went back to Tripoli and practiced assault landings on for the beach. And we sailed from Tripoli on an LCI. And we had a voyage of about 4 or 5 days and went ashore at Salerno.
Was this on the first day at Salerno?
First morning. The brigade was then with 56th London Division. Prior to that, in the desert, we'd been an independent Guards Brigade, and we just went to every division that wanted us. But when we went ashore at Salerno with the 56th London Division.
What time of day did you go in at Salerno?
Early morning.
Were you still in the same company?
No, I'd been promoted Lance Sergeant, and I was with number 3 company.
And do you remember the platoon?
I was at company headquarters. The company commander was Major Mervyn Griffiths Jones.
And what was your job at company HQ?
Signals again.
Can you take me through what the landing was like at Sicily?
We were on this small LCI, very primitive conditions, poor food and everything. And on the 8th of September, we heard over the ship's tannoy that Italy had capitulated. And we thought, well, this is it. We just walk ashore. And a few minutes later, we were bombed by the German Air Force. And there was bombs falling among the landing ships and everything. Anyway, the next morning, the 9th, it would be not long after daylight, I don't think. I can't remember the time now. But we landed at Salerno. And we'd had the usual warnings about the mine possibly... the beach possibly being mined and things like that. Well, I didn't walk up that beach. I skimmed the top. I didn't disturb a grain of sand, I don't think. And we finished up at the back of the beach in tomato fields and vineyards. But it was all under some shell fire and mortar fire and that sort of thing. Because they'd been anticipating us for days.
Did you get wet on the landing?
I didn't even get my boot soles wet. We were landing straight under the sand. Whereas on the practice landing in North Africa, I'd got wet up to the waist, but on the actual job, the Navy landed us right on the beach.
So once you got into the tomato fields, what happened then?
You just laid and gasped, said, thank Christ for that. And we just laid there, and we didn't do anything for until after lunch. And then Major Griffiths Jones took me to what was to be our future position. And we went along in a jeep. I was driving it along a little track. And we were nearly at this position which we'd been told to take or occupy. And there was a farmhouse right at the side of the road. And I was told to put the jeep in the farmhouse yard, out of sight, and we'd go the rest of the way on foot. And I went with Major Griffiths Jones along this track. There was a ditch at the side of the road, and about 100 yards in front of us there was like a big orchard. And about we saw a patrol of Germans going from one side of the track to the other through this wood. So Major Griffiths Jones and I both jumped headfirst into this ditch. And there'd be about 10 or 12 Germans, I would think, going in this patrol. And we laid there. Then he told me to go back to where I'd left the company and bring them up, and he would remain in position there in this ditch. So I went back to the farmyard to get the jeep, and this has nothing to do with the war, actually, but I heard a noise from the stable in this farmyard. And my hair stood on end, because I thought, if I'm getting in this jeep, there's no knowing what I might do or what they might do, but I could hear this noise. And so I had a Tommy gun, and I went to this stable and sort of opened the door, and there was three Italian soldiers in there with a couple of horses. Well, the Italians were in a surrendering mood, thankfully, and I got them out, waving at them with my Tommy gun, and I got them in front of my jeep and indicated that they had to run down this track, and I put my Tommy gun on the seat and drove behind them back to where the company was. And so I went along the road with three Italians in front of my jeep, me knowing, not knowing what I was doing or anything else. And then I brought the company back to the farm again. And we just took up positions there, and it was a bit ding-dong for about 3 or 4 days, if I remember correctly, there.
Was this artillery exchanges or more?
Artillery, mortar, well, it was everything, really. It was unpleasant at times. But
what kind of casualties was the Coldstream Guards taking?
We had some casualties. Not excessive to what we'd got at Marath, because we'd been reinforced between the end of the North African campaign and going to Salerno. But we did have casualties, I know that. And then the 8th Army were advancing from the toe of Italy northwards. And after about 10 days, this be about that time, it relieved the pressure on the Salerno bridgehead and eased things for us. And from there we were sent up to just outside Salerno itself to a place that we called the Pimple, a big hill, which was an unpleasant place where we had casualties there.
How did your signalling work go at the Pimple?
You couldn't rely on the radios, but we did more field lane cables between company and platoons, and platoons and observation posts. And they were always being cut by shell fire and mortar fire. And so we had the job of going out and repairing those. But it was there in that area where Company Sergeant Major Wright got his VC, and Charlie Smy got his Distinguished Conduct Medal.
What did you learn about the winning of those decorations?
Well, I wasn't far from Charlie Smy nearly all the time we were there, because he was my company sergeant major, and he was at company headquarters, and I was at company headquarters, and it was a bit hair-raising there where they got them, because company sergeant major Wright, in one company, he had all the officers killed or wounded. That would be four of them out of 100, and he had to take over charge of the company. Well, I was in three company, and I think we lost a couple of officers, and at a hill 270. And that was a nasty experience. The lower part of the hill was sort of a terraced vineyard all the way around the hill, and then above the vineyard was scrub and heather and that sort of stuff, and that was very hair-raising.
Can you tell me any specific details about the fighting on 270?
Hill 270. Well, I know I was down in the heather, and we had, I think it was three prisoners, it was three Germans. And one was a sergeant major, and there were no trouble or anything. They'd been taken prisoner, they'd lost their arms and that. And about 20 yards in front of us, in the heather, we couldn't see anything. We could hear a German shouting, "Mutter, Mutter, Mutter," obviously seriously wounded. And he kept shouting this out. And this German sergeant major, we're all distressed by this. And this German sergeant major, who could speak passable English, asked if he could go out to him. And so we let this German sergeant major go out to him. And he quietened him. And we had no more calls from this German sergeant major. And the sergeant major came back to us after he'd done whatever he did do. What he did, I don't know. And he came back to us then, did the sergeant major, whereas he could have just easily gone in the opposite direction. But he said he would come back, and he did do.
Any more details you remember from that hill?
So, when he got taken back down the hill, he was he had plenty of cigarettes with him to go with.
Any other memories of that hill?
Yes. We had to cross an open track. Another guardsman and I. And we galloped across.